what a great breakout facility to have. More times than not, it's to keep us from having to go out in the rain, but beautiful day like this. How many people actually went outside to do this? Oh, God, no wonder I didn't see so many of you. Wow, okay. Take advantage of this. I lived here for 7 years. That's why I'm here in August.
He knows.
Yeah, a lot of people were asking about the asset side of the sheet. The reason that we just kept this hidden is because just to concentrate on the liability side is enough for going through this, especially for the first time. Okay, so we purposefully didn't bring up the assets, but I'm going to bring them up now because now that you're familiar with the process, let's finish the deal. And how we finish the deal is, and this came from Dr. Bob himself, that once this has all been worked out, and it's not like anything was ever done linearly because the book was never written as a linear book. This book was dictated, which is why the psychiatric and psychological and medical profession hated it. That's why when this book, well, again, it was originally published to be sold for $95. It wasn't written for us. But Bill dictated it off the top of his head. It's a stream of consciousness. And for some reason, we get it, and the professional community never did get it. The New York Times wrote the most scathing book report that they'd probably ever written on the Big Book when it was first published. But even though assets and liabilities are the heart and soul of the recovery process, we don't actually look at the assets until after we've done the work. And since everybody's done the work, that's now we talk about it. Anything to the left of the assets, once the assets are folded over, those are the assets that you already have. And the ones with the most marks and circles and everything else to the left, those are the things you really need to work on. So in this case, I would say, again, as if I was Dr. Bob, because you never let Dr. Bob without being told your assets as well as your liabilities, that I know you have a bit of shame, but for the most part, you have self-respect. You're certainly a contented person. You're a trusting person. There's only one item to the left on trust. So self-respect, contentment, trust, and I'm even going to throw in humility. There's just two of them. But as you deal with your dishonesty, you'll become more honest. As you deal with your selfishness, you'll become more unselfish. As you deal with your fear, you'll have more faith. And as you deal with your resentments, you'll have more forgiveness. And guess what? We're going to pray for the forgiveness, which is in step six, that it actually, the resentments are removed and that you forgive the people that have harmed you, because that's part of the process. So that's when the assets are actually exposed, is after this process has been worked through. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are all done in one sitting, and it's a process. And 4 is done immediately after 3, so guess what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are done all at once. Okay, and just as we've done today. So I'm gonna punch out of this, and I want to set up step 5. Oh no, where? Oh, I punched up, let me go away, sorry. Yeah, 3 and 4. Okay, here we are with 3 and, oh yeah, that's all here. Okay, slideshow from the beginning. But before I do that, I've got to actually, I've got to go down here. I'm gonna open. Oh, you see, there he is in the little window. You've done the work. Now it's time to have some fun. And this was actually presented to me in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And the man who came up said, the joke's on me, but please feel free to pass it on. And what he was passing on was let's see if I can get this. Okay, good. That he had a sponsee in Pittsburgh who moved to Philadelphia. And about 6 months later, he calls on the phone and he says, "My God, you're not going to believe this. I went to a meeting with Joe Walsh of the Eagles." And the guy from Pittsburgh says, "Oh, really? What position does he play?" True story. Well, he plays lead guitar, and he is one of us, and he wrote a song just for us, and it's called One Day at a Time. So let me cue this up, and let's go for it.
This is about learning how to live my life without my best friend, Monica.
My best friend, Monica.
So I said goodbye to 18 years ago.
18 years ago, and this is the past about 21 years now. Tour the When Hell Freezes Over tour, because the Eagles broke up because of his alcoholism in the late 70s actually, and then they did not reform until the 90s, but in the 80s, it was Don Henley, who is the drum player and also another singer for the Eagles. He did an article for Rolling Stone magazine, and he was asked, are the Eagles ever going to reform as a group? And he said, absolutely, when hell freezes over. And hell did freeze over, because Joe Walsh got sober, and they reformed as a band, and I don't know, this is probably, what, their seventh farewell tour? Well, actually, we lost, God, I can't remember the gentleman's name we lost, but yeah, we just lost him a couple months ago. But, wow. Joe is still with us, one day at a time. Like I said, we'd like to have a lot of fun with this. As part of the journey, I do a lot of historical presentations, and one of them is AA's ancestors, and I talk about the Washingtonians and the Oxford Group, the Emmanuel Movement, which most of you probably never heard of, but they're a contributing factor. The New Thought Movement, which is what this church is based on, is part of our heritage in the 12-step community. That's why I feel so close to this church and the personnel here. Because there's a direct link to our history. I also talk about the miracle cures for alcoholism back in the turn of the last century, 1900. And one of them that I present is Dr. Haynes' Golden Treatment for the Liquor Habit. Anybody have any idea what Dr. Haynes had come up with as a cure for alcoholism?
Cocaine,
you got it. That was quick, dude. Wow. And as hopefully we can attest to, how many people have tried the cocaine cure for alcoholism? Okay.
Good work.
Yeah, it didn't work then, and it doesn't work today. I can share that from first-hand experience, as I'm sure most of you can too. Also, when this thing first came down, we were immediately called by the General Service Office in New York within a month of the book being published, and they said, no, we have no problem with the book whatsoever, but we do have a problem with the title. And we went, whoa, what's wrong with the title? And they said, again, we're only here to suggest, but the title of the original book was Back to Basics, The Alcoholics and Anonymous Beginners Classes, in parentheses. Wow, because Dr. Bob called them Beginners Classes. So that comes from our co-founder. And they said, oh, that smacks of education, and we don't do education, we do spirituality. And I said, oh my God, you're right. So we stopped the presses. If anybody has a yellow book, there's only one printing of the first edition. And we immediately stopped the presses, retitled the book, got a new ISBN number, and immediately went into the second edition based upon the feedback for the General Service Office in New York City. But this was back within a month or two of the book coming out, and they were still called Beginner's Classes, and this was in Phoenix, Arizona. It was hosted by the Phoenix AA Central Office. And it even says that in the fine print, let's see, for additional information, call the central office. And this was an insert that was inside the newsletter. So this went out to everybody in recovery in the entire Phoenix, Southern Arizona area. Kurt and Carol were the host, were presenting. It wasn't me. I did sit in on one or two of them. And they were averaging about 100 to 120 people a week while they were doing this in June and July. And it says, this is not a step study class. All participants will take all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous during the 4 1-hour sessions. And nobody saw the typo. But on July 30th, over 200 people came to take steps 11, 12, and 13. history. You can't pick it up. I guess whatever it takes to get him in the room. Oh, we want to take that. We're descent. We're in. Oh. I mean, that was reviewed by a lot of people. Nobody got it. It went out. And they came. Oh. So we started with a four-step inventory with the assets hidden from view. We came up with a list of people to make amends to, people to forgive. We opened up the assets right at the end so that we could take a look at what assets a person had as opposed to the liabilities. Again, the assets are the ones that have the fewest items to the left. And that's how that works. That's how Dr. Bob did it. Step six and seven, you saw the arrow going up to the blocks. We're going to ask the power to remove the blocks. The blocks are not actually removed until steps eight and nine, when we either make amends to those we've harmed and or forgive those who have harmed us. So that's what this is all about. We're going to do steps six, seven, eight, and nine. And welcome to session number three of the Back to Basics of Recovery. Together we're taking the 12 steps as described in the big book. Our objective is to take the actions necessary to free us from our addictive and compulsive behaviors. Our names are Wally and?
Me.
And we'll be your guides for this meeting. During this session, we'll take steps 6, 7, 8, and 9. During the past two sessions, we've taken steps 1 through 4. Between sessions 2 and 3, we shared our four step with our sharing partner. And hopefully during this talk, we learned about our strengths and weaknesses and admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight is a quote right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will turn our shortcomings over to God as we understand God in steps 6 and 7. We'll make amends to those who've harmed and forgive those who've harmed us in steps 8 and 9. Step 6 reads,
we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
In this step, the big book authors have us answer a simple question. On page 76, starting with the third line in the first paragraph, they ask,
are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can God now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
Now, from this page on, actually, there's a lot of references before this page, but almost extensively, from this page on, every ask is a prayer. Now, there are people that have compiled these prayers and posted them online, and there are many of them, but this is a prayer. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. We pray to the indwelling spirit for the power or for the willingness to forgive. In the case of this inventory, part of it had to do with sexual abuse. The man was accosted by his uncle when he was young. He felt a lot of shame and guilt over it. And we got to step again. We did all the work, and then we're finishing off on 6 and 7. Are you willing to forgive your uncle? He said, hell no. Okay, then let's pray for the willingness. So together we pray. Indwelling Spirit, we know you've heard everything that's transpired between me and my friend, and he's having difficulty with his uncle, and we're asking for the willingness for him to forgive his uncle. Next week, did another inventory. Want to forgive your uncle? Hell no. Okay, let's pray for the willingness. So we did it a second time. Third week, willing to forgive your uncle? His uncle's on the inventory because it hasn't been resolved. He said, are you going to do this until I say yes? I said, yes, I am. Then I guess I'd better forgive my uncle. It's the only way to overcome these resentments having to do with abuse. There's book after book after book out there. There's no middle ground. You either stay in the resentment and take it to your grave and probably die 20 years early because of it, or you can forgive the person and finally move on. And a lot of times it's not done the first time through, or the second time through, or maybe even the third time through. But that's the key to the journey. Pray together for the willingness to forgive. Wow. So that's what this is all about, and let's go ahead and take a moment of silence, and we're going to ask the God of heart, that God is willing to sing, God, the Holy Spirit, to remove everything that's on this liability side of the sheet. Let the power have them all. Moment of silence. Okay, sixth step question.
Are you now ready to let God remove from you all the things which you have admitted are objectionable?
Question mark. Are you now ready to let the power remove the liabilities? And your answer is?
Yes.
Ah, well done. Six down. We did it. Wrote this book and the people who implemented this book in the 1940s and actually into the 1950s. Step 7 reads,
humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings.
Step 7 is a prayer. And before we do the prayer, I want to show you something that was brought to my attention again by the same guy, Jimmy, doing this in Tucson, Arizona, the 24 years old with spiked hair and all. Different color hair every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. This actually comes from him. This is not going back to the 40s at all. Anything that does go back, I try to preface. It starts with, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and bad. That is a direct reference to the assets and liabilities checklist. It does not refer to a 3, 4, or 5 column inventory. As I said, just cross out page 65, cross out the bottom of 67, the entire rest of the book is an assets and liabilities checklist. I now believe that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Again, we're praying to the power at the top of the triangle, and now we take our same sheet and fold it the other way. Now, in step 7, it's the liabilities that are hidden from you. We only live on the asset side of the sheet from step 7 on. This is powerful stuff, and thank you, Jimmy, for bringing that to my attention so I could bring this to your attention, because I think this is one of the hippest, slickest, coolest parts of the whole recovery process. Fold the sheet the other way. Now we live on this side of the sheet for the rest of our lives. Wow. Let's do that 7-step prayer together.
My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your will.
Optional, depending on what room you're in. Again, this was rewritten for treatment centers, halfway houses, prisons, primarily for prisons. And it is catching on in drug courts, and certainly alumni of various treatment centers. I mean, this, This is written very specifically for those people that are being introduced to the 12-step community, no matter what their addiction or affliction is. We're asked to do this because one of the facilities just said right off the top, 70% of our people at our treatment center are not alcoholic. So the Yellow Book is dated. And in 2016, maybe even a little outdated to be used in treatment centers. It certainly is not outdated to be used within the 12-step community. And most people that use that book even make the substitutions themselves. But this is written specifically for those who are just starting on the journey. Okay, now let's move on to step eight. And step eight reads,
made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Okay, and it's very, very simple, very, very straightforward. Do we need to make a list? No, we already made our list in step four. And the eight-step amends list is the names that have got a circle around them. Simple as that. Let's move on to step nine, which reads,
made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Again, the amends process explained in detail on pages 76 through 83 of the Big Book. On page 76, starting with the sixth line in the third paragraph, the author tells us what we need to do.
Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes.
Oh, there's another ask. And that's another prayer. If we are unwilling to make an amends, we pray for the willingness. We ask until it comes. Then on page 77, the Biblical Prophets provide us with an example of a direct amends. They ask us to let our actions rather than our words demonstrate that we have changed. Starting with the fourth line on page 77, they write,
it is seldom wise to approach individuals who still smart from our injustice to them and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. We lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores. Why lay ourselves open? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but they are sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. They are going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Program of action. Take the action. Again, four type of amends: direct, living, amends in kind, and letters to those who cannot be seen. We're going to cover all four of them directly from the Big Book. One of the most difficult amends to make is to someone we genuinely don't like. But whether we like the person or not, we must proceed. On page 77, starting with the ninth line in the first paragraph, we find,
nevertheless, with those we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
The author is making clear what we're doing about our debts, and I kept reading this book in depth and detail, and I can't find it anywhere that it tells us to leave town. It's not in here, sorry. What is in here is we pay them. Woo! We may not like the sacrifice required to make good on our bills, but sacrifice we must. The process forces us to rely on God for the strength and courage to make good on past misdeeds. Under God's direction, we find it much easier to make restitution than we ever thought possible. In the second paragraph on page 78, they state,
most of us owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our past. They usually know of our difficulties anyway, whether we think so or not. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our problem has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to relapse if we are afraid to face them.
And keep in mind that courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is facing the fear and walking through it. The author suggests we ask others for help before we make some of our more difficult events. Again, this is where the role plays come in. Just role play it back and forth until you both feel comfortable about the events. And then as a sponsor, drive the person to where the amends is going to be made. The person does not go out and make an amends alone, especially the first couple. No, you go with them. You're not going in the room, but you're going to wait in the car out at the curb. You're going to wait at Starbucks down the street. The concept from the 40s was the sponsor was to be the first person the newcomer saw after amends was made. Because what if amends doesn't go well? What if you get thrown out of the office or told they don't even want to see you again, and you start running? Where are you running to? The dope den, the crack house, the bar room, the liquor store? Absolutely. No, they're into the sponsor. How'd it go? Oh, I just got thrown out of the office. I don't even know if they want to see me anymore. They're going to talk about it and see whether even I still have a job. Oh, let's go to Denny's and talk about it. Let's go to Starbucks and talk about it. Up in Canada, let's go to Timmy Hortons and talk about it. How'd it go? Oh my God, it went so well. They just want me to work a few extra hours a week just to make up for the hours that I didn't work. And all is well. Okay, let's go to Timmy Hortons, let's go to Starbucks, let's talk about it. Be the first person the sponsor sees. You're not to leave the newcomer alone ever when they're in the first throes of the recovery process. We're there to help them. We're not here to direct them. We're there to participate with them. I've driven a guy who was shopping doctors. I drove him to two of the doctors that he had gotten prescriptions from that were over and above the prescription he already had. And I waited in the waiting room. And I was the first person he saw when he came out. You know, the prescriptions were canceled, but he had to go in and get honest. My sponsor was with me when I made my first amends. He couldn't be there physically, so I called him. I've got three stories, but I know we're going to try to. Some people have to leave at three, so we're going to try to do as much as we can before three. I do want to tell at least two of these, though. One is that I didn't pay my taxes for a few years before I got here, like 4 years before I got here. And my sponsor and I sat down. Like I said, my sponsor took me through the steps in less than 4 hours to save my life because he knew the original program. And I'll always be beholden to him, but he just said, you've got a financial amends to make here, make it. But he didn't give me a lot of guidelines. I probably should have called a tax attorney, but I didn't. So it's 1988, and I filed 88, it's 89, so I filed 88, which was behind. And I cleared that one. I filed 87, I cleared that one. I filed 86, and I cleared that one. But before I could file 85, that was dumb going backwards. But that was the easier softer way for me. I get sued by the IRS. Now this is not an honor. I'm sued. They want $60,000. And they set a court date. So now I do get a tax attorney, and too late to, the wreckage had already been created. So two things, one, I found out during the course of our discussions that the guy had 20 years of sobriety. Yeah, out of all the people I could have chosen in Tucson, Arizona, I get an attorney with 20 years of sobriety. He's been a IRS prosecutor for 7 years, and he's been an IRS defendant for 20 years. So he was even doing it both drunk and sober. But yeah, he was really honest about it. He was really honest. He said, "You're going to lose the case. So when it gets really bad, throw yourself on the mercy of the court." So it's tax day, and down we go. And he knows the judge, because the judge has driven all the way from Phoenix, Arizona, to Tucson, 120 miles, to prosecute this case. I'm going to jail if I don't have the money or make a payment plan. The prosecuting attorney had driven with her from Phoenix all the way to Tucson. So they're both there, and I've got my defense attorney. And they swear me in, and I'm on the stand. And it's really before the prosecuting attorney even started to hammer me. Actually, they had me dead to rights. I had sold some property, and I never claimed capital gains. That's a lot of money when you're selling fourplexes and duplexes and all these properties, which I happen to own up here in Seattle. I was living elsewhere, but I sold them and never put it on my tax return. But the judge turns to me and, I don't know, are we recording or not? No? Yes? I'm not sure if we're some of the people that conduct the 12-step groups here. So she turns to me and said, "Mr. P, can you tell us why not only you didn't file any taxes in 1985, you didn't pay any taxes in 1985. Oh, you're wrong, 1985 was such a bad year. I'm living in New Orleans, Louisiana, and selling some property out of state, and then I get transferred to Scottsdale, Arizona, and my wife she divorces me, and every time I open the boxes, I could see her handwriting and all the checks and various things back and forth. And I go into this full-blown depression, and she's looking up at the ceiling, and the prosecuting attorney's looking at her, going, oh yeah, here we go. And my attorney jumps up and says, Your Honor, Your Honor, he's an alcoholic. What? Blows my anonymity in IRS tax court. Mr. P, are you an alcoholic? Yes, I am. How long have you been sober? 1 year. I've got a 1 year medallion in my pocket. And where do you go to meetings? And I told her, well, you're from Phoenix. I learned that from my defense attorney. And I go to meetings in the northwest side of Tucson. It's the Northwest Salami Club. It's an old dog kennel. They moved on to larger facilities, and we cleaned up the old place, and we had meetings there for about 15 years before, at 10 bucks a year for the whole facility, before they came and built this highway right through the middle of it. That's why it was only a temporary situation, but we had it for 15 years. And I said, yeah, I go to meetings in the dog kennel in the northwest side of Tucson. And she said, are you being of service to AA? Whoa, now what is that all about? I said, yes, I am. I was just elected GSR for my group. And I went back to my attaché case And if you become a GSR, at least in AA, they send you a letter. And it's got letters from the General Service Office in New York. And she looks at it and she says, Mr. P, you're not just an alcoholic, you're a registered alcoholic. Exhibit A for the defense. Or exhibit number one. It's the only defense document we had. Exhibit number one. From the General Service Office in New York. The prosecuting attorney starts hammering me hard, bang, 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 bang. And about a half hour in, my head's spinning, and she says, I'm gonna say it the way it was said in IRS tax court. I have no idea how much of this was real and or how much of this was a setup. But she turns to me and says, I want to stop this trial for a minute. Mr. P, my daughter's an alcoholic. And she's 26 years old, and she's moved back into the house, and she's going to, and I've been taking her to AA meetings, which is why I know something about your fellowship. But she's still drinking. Is there anything you can suggest that I can pass on to her? And I said, I don't know if I've got anything to pass on to her, but I want to suggest that you consider going to Al-Anon, which is for family members of alcoholics. You might find your answer there. Oh, thank you, Mr. P. On with the truck. Another half hour. Bang, bang, bang. Oh, he asked Mr. P another question. My son's a cocaine addict. Like I said, this is exactly what was said. And he's been going to these AA meetings, and he's still using cocaine. Is there anything that you can suggest that I can pass on to him? And I said, well, when you're newly sober or newly clean, identification is very important. He may actually be in the wrong room. He might want to consider going to meetings of Cocaine Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, and he may find more of a affiliation there than with Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, oh, thank you, Mr. P. Okay, on with the trial. And he's getting, the prosecuting attorney is just getting ready to finish the summary. And she said, I'm stopping this trial right now. The Mr. P who's sitting in this box is not the same Mr. P that did not file his tax returns and did not pay his taxes in 1985. As far as I'm concerned, he doesn't owe the IRS one dime. Case dismissed. Boom. Forgiven. $60,000. And as my attorney and I are walking out of the room, he looks at me and he says, I've been doing this for all these years. I have never heard transpire in an IRS tax courtroom what happened this morning. He said, if you don't believe in God before now, I hope you believe in God now. I said, I believe. And we went to the new meeting together. So, And again, we must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go. I was terrified going into that courtroom. We're liable to relapse if we are afraid to face them. Well, I wasn't going to face them alone, and thank God I did have help, both of the physical and the spiritual kind. But that's one story, and you just can't make this stuff up. I have been so blessed by so many people over the years. So in terms of others, we have to ask others for help. That's where we role play this thing. We need direction, preferably with someone who understands the inventory and amends process. In the second paragraph on page 79 and the first paragraph on page 80, they caution us not to create further harm as we clean up our side of the street. Usually, however,
other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save themselves. Before taking drastic action which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, we have consulted with others, have asked God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink.
And that's it, consulted with others. That's the role play between you and your sponsor. The one story I have for that is driving from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. I'm in between bookings, and I'm just hot putting it down the freeway, Highway 95, and a sponsee from Tucson called, and he said, Wally, I'm in trouble. I said, what's up, Floyd? He said, I'm working for Compass Healthcare, it's a treatment center, a large treatment center too. So I said, yeah, you're doing quite well. He said, well, one of the rules and regulations is that working in the treatment center, you can't wear two hats. You've got to wear your treatment center hat when you're working in treatment. You can't sponsor anybody until they've been out of the treatment center for 1 year. He broke the rule. And he was sponsoring at 9 months. This guy had been out for 9 months. And another guy at the treatment center turned him in. And so now he's being called in front of the CEO and all powers that be at this treatment center. And I said, oh, Floyd, okay. And I'm driving at 65. And he said, I said, when's the meeting? He says, it's in 10 minutes. I said, well, let's go for it then. What are you going to say? We're going to come up with plan A, B, and C. Plan A, what if they fire you? What are you going to say? Thank you. Yes, and bow out gracefully. What if they put you on a 90-day suspension or something to that effect? He said, how are you going to respond? Okay, we talked about that back and forth. They may just give you a slap on the wrist and tell you never do it again. Okay. What would you say in that regard? So we went back and forth, back and forth. So we had plan A, plan B, and plan C. He calls me back an hour later, as I'm trying to work my way through DC traffic, and says, Wally, the role play was phenomenal, but it turned out to be not A, B, or C, it turned out to be D. Okay, Floyd, what's D? I was so honest with them, they gave me a promotion. So even the best case scenario in terms of the role play, you might miss something. So just keep that in mind too. Not only was he given a promotion, but he was put in charge of 28 people, and he was next year he became Employee of the Year for Compass Healthcare. They had 500 employees just because he told the truth about this guy. Wow. So you just never knew. Consulted with others. That's the role play. Role play the possible outcomes and then get ready to have a laugh or two. Okay. The first paragraph on page 83, we learn how to make a living on minutes.
Yes, there is a long period of reinstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. So we clean house, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love.
And those are all assets from the asset side of an assets and liabilities checklist. Patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The living amends is straightforward. We live to the best of our ability as a recovered member of the 12-step community. This is one of the greatest amends we can make to our families and friends. As the big book author is writing, our behavior will convince them more than our words, quote unquote. The amends in kind is described in the first paragraph on page 82, amends in kind.
Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk face-to-face combat.
And amends in kind implies doing something instead of or in place of. For example, if you and your partner decide that a direct amends will only make the situation worse, you can develop an alternative plan of action, such as taking a beginner's meeting into a halfway house or prison, volunteering at a homeless shelter or assisted living facility, or making a service commitment to a 12-step group. In the third paragraph on page 83, the biblical authors give us directions on what to do if we can't make amends to someone face-to-face.
There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter.
Okay, pertaining to amends, step 9 states, except when to do so would injure them or others. In the first paragraph on page 80, the authors write, before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. Unsolicited letters can cause more harm than good, not only for the recipient, but also for those he or she is presently involved with. The key to letter writing is to let it go and move on. In the early days, the men's letters were sent without a name, address, a return name, or a return address in an envelope. Of significance is that these letters went exactly where they needed to go in order for us to heal. Today we see a variation on that theme, and that's the burning of the letters. So there are four types of amends: direct amends, living amends, amends in kind, and amends to those who cannot be seen. Again, Dr. Bob, made his amends in one day and never drank again, so we have Dr. Bob to thank for that. Rather than read the paragraph, I just want to explain that when Dr. Bob made his amends, it's on page 156 of the Big Book, it did destroy his career. He was a surgeon and he lived off referrals from those who were general practitioners. I find it amazing that in the 1920s and even into the 1930s, he still got referrals, even though everyone in Akron knew that he was a drunk. I guess it was okay to be a drunken doctor, but it certainly was not okay to be an alcoholic doctor. That word had a very, very negative connotation in the 1930s. Even still has a negative connotation today in many groups and many of the people that are out there. But what happened is the referrals dried up, and Dr. Bob and Ann Smith lived in abject poverty for the rest of their lives. How many of the people have ever been to Dr. Bob's home? Anybody been there? Yeah, Leonard for sure. Okay, and over here? Oh, a couple. Very small, very unpretentious home. Only two. It's well worth the trip. The home was paid for by John D. Rockefeller so that Dr. Bob did not become homeless like Bill W. and his wife Lois did. So Rockefeller put up some money. All the money was paid back. I do separate seminars on things like that. So the money was paid back in the 40s, but that's what saved Dr. Bob and Ann Smith from being evicted from their home. But they still lived in abject poverty. They lived on hot milk and bread, many a dinner. They might have hot dogs once a week, maybe. But what amazes me is Dr. Bob had time on his hands. Enough time to take 5,000 people through the steps in 10 years, do the math, that was 1.3 people a day, and 3 out of 4 of them never drank again. Wow, he set the bar pretty high for the rest of us. Next session, we're going to take steps 10, 11, and 12. We're going to take steps 10, 11, and 12. But before we end this session, I want to lay the groundwork for step 11, because step 11 is primarily from page 85 to page 88 of the Big Book. I want to take a few minutes and read some of the passages that are throughout the Big Book. In fact, there are 26 references to practicing the second half of the 11th step in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 26 of them. The way to separate self-will from God's will, the voice of addiction from the voice of recovery, is in steps 4, 10, 11. It's in the Big Book 3 times. Steps are only in there once. This is in there 26 times. So step 11 is critically important. So I want to start by defining the word guidance. The dictionary explains the word guidance as to lead or direct, influence, or regulate, send them up to disclose or to show. So I want to take you back to some of the passages in the Big Book that predate or are ahead of the passages that we're going to read next session, which is from pages 85 to 88. So I want to start with page 83. We actually read this earlier this session. I want for us to look at it again.
So we clean house, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love.
The indwelling spirit is going to guide us to the asset side of the sheet. Show us, guide us, direct us, all synonyms. There are many more references to guidance starting all the way back at the first step. We're only going to mention a few of them on page 13 of the big book. Oh, and I do have a handout. I'm going to bring it out at the break. The 26 references to guidance in the big book. It's backstage right now, but I will bring it up. Page 13, Bill W. writes about prayer meditation. Starting with the third line in the fourth paragraph, he states,
I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as God would have me.
When we ask God for direction and strength, we're calling upon the Spirit of the universe to guide us in a way which is indeed miraculous. It's essential that we sit quietly, especially during periods of stress or uncertainty, so we can clearly hear what God has to say. Meditation is based on the belief that a power greater than ourselves speaks to those who are willing to listen. We write down the thoughts and ideas we receive, speak into our cell phones. Fingertip guidance is an alternative. We're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. So that we can separate the voice of addiction from the voice of recovery, the guidance that comes from, this is a quote, infinite God rather than our finite selves. And that's one of the handouts that's in the packet, the voice of addiction versus the voice of recovery, handout number 15. So it's going to be on the back of one of these pages. No, it isn't. It's on the front of one of these pages. Oh, 15, odd number, 1, 3, 5. Okay, I got it. It tells us in steps 4, 10, and 11 how to separate the voice of spirit from the voice of ego. This is one of the greatest things that we can ever learn in the rooms. Again, from the old timers, the steps are all about becoming a listener. It's all about the second half of step 11. It's not about alcohol. It's not about drugs. It's not about sex. It's not about anything other than learning how to become a listener. Steps 1 through 10, we remove the things that are blocking us from becoming a listener. Step 11 teaches us how to listen. And step 12, we listen as we carry the message to others. We don't sponsor people. We let the Spirit do the talking. We just step back and watch the miracles. So you do have this as a way to separate the voice of ego from the voice of spirit. The voice of addiction from the voice of recovery. What are the handouts? So now, and again, this is the recovery triangle. This is what recovery looks like. And we'll talk more about that next session. But this is a lead into the recovery triangle that not only can the Spirit speak to us directly, but the Spirit can speak to us through other people. Wow. Page 69, starting with the sixth line in the third paragraph, we learn that God will answer our questions if we just ask. In meditation,
we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it.
If we want it. If we ask for it. If we pray for an answer. In the second paragraph of page 70, we read about some of the things we ask for.
We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing.
Great things to pray for. These are just a few examples from the Big Book on Prayer and Meditation. Hopefully they're sufficient to get us started in step 11. And here are a few things to keep in mind on awakening. Some people have been through the Yellow Book. We do have a pamphlet that was written in 1938 by a personal friend of Dr. Bob's. It's titled, How to Listen to God. I've been accused of being very verbose, converting a 4-page pamphlet into a 320-page book. But that's what's on the table out there, the 320-page version. But I personally have rewritten that pamphlet, so it's applicable to all addictions and has been upgraded to 2016, and that is one of your handouts, listening to the indwelling spirit. And there's just a few things to keep in mind. Set time aside to do this. 5 minutes. I get a call from Steve G. Lives in Stuart, Florida. I took him through the steps in Center City, Minnesota in 1997. He's still sober today. Took him through the steps actually in a cafeteria between 12 and 2 o'clock in the morning. And he got it and still has it. He's hanging on to it. He calls me and says, I'm here in about 1999. I want to share guidance with you, Wally. And I said, Steve, it's 11 o'clock in Stuart, Florida, but it's only 8 o'clock in Tucson, Arizona. He said, what are you trying to tell me? I'm trying to tell you I haven't done my guidance yet. He said, well, when did you wake up? I said, oh, about an hour ago. And then silence. 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 What? No time for God? God's got time for you. You mean you can't give God 5 minutes of your time? It doesn't say an hour after awakening, it says on awakening. And he nailed me. And that's why I do my guidance every morning on awakening, just in case Steve calls. That's the reason I do it. Set aside time to meditate. The book says on awakening. Relax and take it easy. Yeah, that it is. It's all about doing some deep breathing. We're going to do a deep breathing exercise for the next session. Write down either during or after the period of meditation the guidance you receive so you don't forget it. That's something to review at night. As I mentioned, it's really easy to do the nightly review if we haven't written anything down in the morning. Oh my God, it's close. Oh no, I took it back into the other room. I was sharing it with my sharing partner. Bring it back out at the break. And test the guidance. That's the test. Is it ego or is it spirit? You have the test in the fourth, seventh, and tenth step. So it's real easy to tell which side of the page you're on. The realm of the material from the realm of the spirit. And those are quotes from the big one. Check the guidance of the sharing partner partners. Talk to the phone and hit send. And have them send you theirs. And then you've got something to talk about when you call each other. And follow through with the guidance that passes the test of forgiveness, faith, unselfishness, and honesty. That's the asset side of the assets and liabilities checklist. It is the recovery, the voice of recovery side of Kashyyyk in terms of the voice of addiction versus the voice of recovery. Fingertip guidance, some people don't feel comfortable meditating and writing at the same time. You can capture the essence of what you're receiving in terms of sight, sound, sensation, and knowing. Those are the four channels. By just capturing the essence of it. Oh, I saw a picture of a tree and a bird and then I heard the singing. So there's a couple. There's sight and sound right there. Capture it. And then you can write it down after your period of meditation. Another stream of consciousness, capture your second figure. It's a basic memorization technique that goes all the way back to the 30s, if not before. But also, I've seen a guy who was a master at it in Austin, Texas. And I've actually watched him capture 24 pieces of guidance on both hands total. All those little parts of the fingers, 24, and recite them 7 days later. Yeah, he's good. I can get maybe two or three and write around 10 minutes later. That's as far as I can get. But his name's Blind Dave. Say that again.
Can you explain the figurative guidance more?
Oh, you receive guidance, call Bill, write a letter. I mean, whatever you receive in guidance, just capture it on your fingertips. Wait till the end of your meditation session, and then touch your thumb to your finger again, and you remember what's on there. Yeah, it really does work. It's a basic memorization technique. Anybody that's in high school or college, it's a great way to pass tests. It really is. Yeah, and you'll find it in all the all the meditation books in terms of not meditation books, but memorization books. It's a great memorization technique that came to us in the 30s. So you can capture it and then just write it down later. Line Dave, you can capture 24 and recite them verbatim, because I wrote them down. He can't write it. I wrote them down. I didn't challenge him, but somebody else challenged him 7 days later, and he just rattled them off. Okay, this was Monday, this was Tuesday, this was Wednesday, this was Thursday, this was Friday, and this was Saturday, and this was Sunday. Wow. He's still with us. I did get a chance to see him in Austin, Texas about 2 years ago. If you're in Austin, he goes to meetings. Just look for Blind Dave. Amazing. That's the fingertip guidance. So let's give it a try. We're going to give it a try next session. Let's go ahead and take a break. I'm going to reconvene at 3:05. Let's keep this a short one. 3:05, and we'll finish up at 4. I know some people have to leave early. Let me get the handout on the 26 references to guidance in the big book, and I'll be right back here with that within 30 seconds.